Man, I'm having so much fun. This is a $1.6 trillion industry. I'm talking about the food and beverage space. If you're not having fun, you're in the wrong place. Yes, it's hard work, but my gosh, the companies, the brands, the flavors, the experiences, the missions, it's fantastic. But some of the brands are different, better, and special. They're the ones who are able to really compete and vie for customer loyalty. Look, I know you want to make your brand different, better, and special. I know you yourself want to be different, better, and special. That's my mission. That's why you're here. Join me on this journey as I interview CEOs and founders from all the different companies within the food and beverage industry so we can discover what they're doing, so we can take that information back, digest it, and become better ourselves, and to help our companies take on different strategies, pick the right technology, pick the right partners. And of course, you got to have great tasting food. You got to have great tasting beverages. Packaged goods. If it doesn't taste good, you're lost. I'm sorry. You're going to lose millions. If you're new here, take the 5-episode challenge. Go back, pick out some brands, some CEOs, some topics. If you love the content, subscribe. You're going to find it on every podcast platform once or twice a week. But I also publish them on LinkedIn, because that's where we kind of hang out. So when you see it on LinkedIn, stop by, make a comment, share it back into your food and beverage network. I would appreciate it. The brands would appreciate it. To all my loyal listeners, thank you so much. You guys are awesome. Thank you for being with me on this journey. Thanks for coming along on this mission for the past 2 years. If you are considering a strategic job change, message me. Let's have a confidential conversation. If your brand is growing and you need to attract experts, you also need to contact me, because I have created a different, better, and special recruiting system. I promise you, no other search firm in America is doing that. Who am I? I'm Tony Moore. I'm an expert food and beverage headhunter, semi-professional podcaster, and I'm here each and every week. Stay tuned for this week's episode. The more I get into the food and beverage space, the more I'm fascinated by the world of agriculture and just the challenges that farmers have delivering fresh fruit to the marketplace and all the other channels that fruit are sold into, because not all fruit makes it into the grocers because they have these standards. And anyway, it's a really challenging space. And I just recently saw, this is probably one of the funniest. It's not really a documentary, but it was on Amazon. You can watch it on Amazon right now. It's with Jeremy Clarkston, and he is kind of a famous British guy. He's known for his work within the automotive space, but he's also been on So You Want to Be a Millionaire as the host. And he owns 1,000 acres in the Cotswolds over in England, and his primary farmer retired. And he said, you know what? That's all right. I'll farm it. They decided to turn this into a series, and it's called Clarkston's Farm. So I have been digging into everything farming left, right, and center. I'm totally fascinated by it. And very recently, I had the opportunity to meet Wayne Lutomsky. He's the president for Fruit Smart, and they're up in Washington. And he and I have kind of got to know each other. And I thought, you know, this might be a great time. Are you out of your honeymoon period yet, by the way, Wayne? When does the honeymoon officially end?
If you give me 6 months for the honeymoon, then yes. I'm now 8 months in as the president.
So the training wheels.
Training wheels come off.
Have been raised, and now you have to fly on your own. So we've got Wayne here today from Fruit Smart. We've got a lot of different topics we want to talk through that are affecting farmers, ag, all the different channels that are being sold into. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Wayne, so good to have you in now that you've got your training wheels off.
Well, it's good to be here, Tony. I appreciate you reaching out to have this conversation. And I think there's a lot of things to talk about in this space right now.
Yeah, there are. And I know, again, I've been kind of diving in, doing kind of a deep dive around farming. But for people who haven't gone down that road as far, tell us a little bit about Fruit Smart and kind of what your your focus is, who you're supporting, and kind of the markets that you're selling into.
Sure. So FruitSmart is a fruit processing company based up in Eastern Washington, about 3.5 hours southeast of Seattle, 3.5 hours northeast of Portland. So kind of like that triangle. And this is extremely fertile ground, interesting enough, for fruits. We grow just about any fruit that's available here in the United States, except for citrus. But in addition to that, you have onions and potatoes and carrots, any number of vegetables as well. It's a very fertile ground. FruitSmart specializes, however, in fruit. So any of the fruits that are grown here in the Pacific Northwest, which is many, we will process. We will take the culls, which we can talk about a little bit later. We'll take the culls and we make that into a juice concentrate, a puree, fibers, oils. We'll take the seeds and crush the seeds and capture the oil from the seeds of the products. The net-net of it is we utilize the entire fruit to make product that then goes into ingredients as an ingredient into consumer packaged goods that, we all buy and consume. The beauty of these are it's all upcycled.
Yeah, which means, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yep, that's the word you're looking for. And that's what's on the consumer mind right now. Consumers are very interested knowing that almost 30, 40% of all food produced is made to waste.
Wait, say that number again.
Almost 40% of all food that is produced goes to waste for a variety of reasons. It's a stunning number. It's a $7 billion hit to the economy, if you will, that food that is produced.
I mean, you put all the inputs in and you don't get the output unless you go through this kind of upcycling process.
Well, you do put the inputs in. I mean, for the packaged good company, more often than not, it's purchased and it's that the consumer never consumes it. You know, it passes their pull date or whatever, and they just said, oh, I can't eat it anymore, and they throw it away, or they prepare it and then eat only half of it and throw the other half away. That all adds up into it. But then there's a lot of food that is produced that's ugly, ugly fruit, for example, or ugly vegetables. They're not pretty enough. They don't hit the standards, the size, the color, whatever the case may be, to make it to the fresh market. And that's where we come in, particularly on fruit, because those products then are sold to us. And that's what we use to make the juice, the purees, and so forth. And these things still have all the health benefits of the initial fruit, right? There's nothing different other than maybe the shape was wrong or the size was too big or too small. There's nothing wrong with the fruit. It just doesn't fit the standards that you would buy going to buy a fresh apple at your local Kroger or Safeway.
Yeah, the area there you're referring to in the Pacific Northwest it's the fruit basket of the world.
It is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, literally everything grows up there. I mean, it's nice. It's like that. Isn't it that rich kind of volcanic as well? That darker.
There's some of that. Yes, the region actually was formed by some floodlands that came out of the Missoula, Montana area, you know, eons ago, if you will. It must have been a massive flood. It was a reservoir that was created by melting glaciers, and it just popped through, and the forest just created all kinds of great geographic systems, if you will, for agriculture. And it's just an amazing thing to see all the different vineyards and orchards and so forth in the area. It's really quite pretty.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I've got some family that live out there near the Rose Garden Portland, or down in Portland. And that whole area, all that through that area, it's amazing.
It is.
So when you bring in these apples and other fruits, are you buying directly from the farmers, or are you getting them from other distribution points that had to reject them because they're the culls?
Right. So we do both. We do buy direct from farmers, which is very good. That typically happens in season at the harvest, right? But harvest seasons are sometimes very limited. Cherries runs for a month, starting about now. And then berries come and then apples run for about 6 to 8 weeks. So you buy directly from the farmers during that harvest period. And then you go ahead and start making the juices and so forth. But a lot of the product that we buy does go to what is known as packing houses. And these are the groups that sort the fruit for fresh retail or the culls, if you will. And that's stored typically in a controlled atmosphere room to retard the ripening process so that you can have the fruit 6 months from now, a year from now, from this harvest, right? And then when the new harvest comes, you replenish the rooms and start the cycle all over again.
Well, that's amazing. I didn't know you could keep fruit that long. That's probably a discussion for another time, but that's I knew you could extend it, but I didn't know 6-12 months.
Yeah, it's really amazing. These controlled atmosphere rooms are very expensive to operate, but they're essential to the supply chain because, you know, as Americans, we want our apples, we want our berries, our strawberries, our blueberries every day of the year, not just when they're in season.
That makes sense.
Right? That's so these controlled atmosphere rooms become essential.
Mm-hmm. So just before we get into kind of a more of a deep dive, kind of the chief issues right now, kind of facing everyone, can you just give us a high level overview of just the system as it stands now?
Great. So we'll focus on fruit. That's primarily what we do.
Yeah.
Vegetables are not much different, but there are some variances to that, but we'll focus on the fruit. So for the most part, the farmers will harvest the fruit, whatever that fruit might be. And a lot of farmers will have several different types of fruit available on their acreage. But once they harvest the fruit, typically they will work directly with a packing house. These are the organizations that I mentioned that will put the product in the controlled atmosphere room to maintain the product so that you can buy it 6 months from now. Those packing houses are the key because they have these massive warehouses and packing sheds where they go through a mechanized system where pictures are taken and you identify, is this the right size? Is it the right color? These pictures can even identify if there's bruises inside the apples, for example. And it will actually, in the computer system, track that apple, and at a certain point, it'll go down a conveyor belt and it will pop it into, you know, a box for Safeway or a box for Kroger or a box for whomever, or it'll drop it into a box for a different retail operation, or thirdly, it'll drop it into a box for culls. That's the product that doesn't quite meet the standard for whatever reason of the fresh market. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating to see this in operation.
I'm going to have to go on YouTube and see if I can find one of these climate control rooms.
Oh, yeah. It certainly worth seeing. It's really worth seeing, if you can, the packing house sorting operation.
Packing house sorting. I mean, like the x-rays. I mean, that is like
It's just pictures. It's not. Yeah, it's just pictures. But you're right. It's unbelievable to see. And, you know, a lot of people don't have any clue how the food gets to their shelf.
That's why I want to do these, right? I'm trying to raise more awareness around the process that these farmers go through and then the role that companies like FruitSmart play.
Right, right. So once the product goes to the packing house and that's been sorted, that packing house then is actually the sales agent to the retail trade. So that packing house will then call on the Krogers, the Safeways, the Walmarts of the world, selling the product that they have packed. Okay. That product that does not go to retail is then typically sold to companies like ourselves, who then process it into other products, ingredients, like I said, juices, purees, fibers, powders, and so forth. then our responsibility is to go sell that product to other consumer packaged good companies, whether they be foods, they could be beverages, they could be nutraceuticals, they could be cosmetics, depending on the type of product that you've made. It's our responsibility to go sell that out to the marketplace.
So talk about that marketplace for a minute. Are there any particular trends you see emerging? Obviously, functional beverages have been really hot. Of course, people are trying to add, you know, other benefits to these drinks and foods. What are you seeing right now in the food world for?
Well, you're absolutely right, Tony. In the food and beverage world right now, functionality is becoming really critical to the delivery of a product, right? Consumers for many years have been trending. I worked with Pepsi 20 years ago, and this was a trend then, but it has been heightened through COVID. The pandemic has made people even more aware of the need of the food and beverages they consume to deliver more than just a great taste. It's now more important to deliver some kind of benefit that you derive versus just the simple pleasure that you have of drinking the product or the food that you eat. Consumers want the food and beverages they consume to contribute to their health and wellness. And that is happening globally, and it has accelerated since COVID.
Yeah, you mentioned contribute to wellness. So is there a particular category that seems to be leading the way?
Right now, gut health seems to be top of mind. Gut health has been tied to help provide more immunity. And of course, with COVID, what's one thing that everybody wants is to be more immune to whatever the pathogens might be out there in the marketplace. So gut health is certainly up there. Energy has always been up there and remains top of mind. But those are two, you know, one long-term trend and one emerging trend. Mm-hmm. Long-term energy, the emerging being the gut health.
The gut health. So let's take us back to the farmer, because I know there are lots of issues like weather, you know, high input cost, sustainability seems to be a big issue. Kind of educate us around the kind of what keeps the farmers up at night right now.
Yeah, there's a lot keeping the farmers up at night.
Do they ever sleep?
Very honest with you, right? Yeah. The weather is always a factor. And it's always outside of their control. I'll give you a prime example. The week before Easter here in our region, we had snow, which is very late in the year for us. And as a result, the apricot farmers in this region, which are the first fruits to typically come online, were almost completely wiped out, losing almost 100% of their crop.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, no. The cherry growers are what comes next. Lost 30% of their crop because it got too cold. It damaged the buds that were about to blossom, if you will. It prevented the pollinization at the right time of the tree, of the plant. Many facets, right? But a lot of it was the snow. A year ago, at this time right here in Washington, we had a major heat wave of over 2 weeks of 110 plus degrees. That also destroyed lots of the crop, 50% of the Concord crop, 15% of the apple crop. Those are things that the farmers have absolutely no control over. But it's something that they monitor every day. I mean, there are some preventative things they can do. They can put fans in the market, in the orchard or vineyard to help move move heat, what little heat there might be around. They can blanket with certain types of cloth, if you will, small parts of their acreage. And then again, it's you know, you hope and pray for the good outcome. So weather.
Oh, I guess that's why they take out insurance.
Well, you do. You know, the federal government through the U.S. Department of Agriculture does have insurance for crops. And yes, it would be a foolish farmer not to have it.
I would think so, just with the volatility there.
Just with the volatility.
But what about the other things that are happening? Yeah, there's so much other stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Right now, the other two key issues are fertilizer. Fertilizing costs have skyrocketed. We have one grower that we buy direct from that up a year ago spent $400 an acre for fertilizer. We'll spend over $1,000 an acre this year. And that was happening before the war. Before the war. The prices have just gotten worse since then because Russia and Ukraine, interesting enough, are major suppliers of raw materials of the fertilizer.
Wayne, I just kind of thought of something. So these packing houses in some ways have shielded us from some of the higher inflation costs that are coming.
Yes.
Just occurred to me that you've got a supply chain that's backed up that can be released. It probably will go out at a higher rate, but it's the new stuff that's going in. That's what's going to wallop.
Exactly. This is where inflation is going to continue to run, at least in food, because as the new crops come in, the wheat, the corn, the soy, all of these things are going to have higher input costs just on fertilizer. The second thing will, of course, be labor. You know, as the states, and understandably so, raise minimum wages, the farmers now have to pay higher wages if they can get people to come pick the crop. And that's the challenge, right? So you're paying higher wages, you're paying time and a half for overtime because you can't get enough people to come in and bring in the crop. So that's a major factor too. Those two factors on the input costs, right? The weather you can't control, but the fertilizer cost and the labor are also major factors driving costs up.
Well, and these things are just kind of out of their control. So when they're, you know, so when they hear words and concepts like sustainability request, they don't have any control over that.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
I wouldn't think.
Yes and no. I mean, keep in mind the major consumer product bans in the United States, the major retailers in the United States have all made significant commitments to sustainability, and rightfully so. These are the organizations that are going to drive sustainability more than anything else, more than any government policy or anything. It'll be these consumer brands, these retailers that will drive it. They have very significant commitments that they are now pushing down into the supply chain. There are three scopes, right? Scope one is what you can control as a company. That's how much electricity you use, how much water you use. Can you take your manufacturing process, generate steam, capture that, and reuse that to generate electricity? Those are things, scope one, that a company can control. Scope two is the logistics, getting product from point A to point B that they can control. You know, do I use a truck? Do I use rail? Do I use air? All those factors. But 70% of the carbon footprint in any company, as a general rule, is what's known as scope three. That's the supply chain. That's people like ourselves, and even further down the chain to the farmers, right? So the farmers now, in order to be able to sell to a Walmart, to be able to sell to any other major retailer or an ingredient supplier like myself, to be able to go sell to a Nestle, to a Pepsi, to a Coca-Cola, we all now have to meet the sustainability requirements that these companies have put in place. Most of them are manageable. Most of them are manageable. And these packing houses, in order to sell, they've all forced those programs down onto the farmers. So the farmers now have to be far more sustainable. And typically what that means is utilizing a program of regenerative agriculture. Regenerative agriculture has been around for 20, 25 years, but has really gained a lot of steam in the last 4 or 5 years. General Mills, Danone have been real pioneers in this area, doing massive tests with their agricultural supply chain to determine what's the right methodology. And there are four basic things to regenerative agriculture that work, right? One is manage your fertilizer inputs and outputs, manage those types of things. Secondly, is known as cover crops. When the winter comes, instead of just leaving the ground fallow, you place a small cover crop over the top to protect the soil from the winter season, to prevent erosion of the topsoil, to maintain the nutrient base. So cover crops are a key factor. And there are two other ones there that we don't need to get into full details, but those are basic, the two top elements of regenerative agriculture.
Yeah, that is a space that I keep hearing more and more about. Is how is that? Well, yeah, this may be a little bit off scope, but is that a little bit different than like permaculture, where you're kind of trying to farm within the natural constraints of an area rather than forcing something?
It's a little bit different. I mean, permaculture would be, to your point, working within the natural constraints. But keep in mind, a lot of these farms are massive. They're 1,000 acres, 10,000 acres, and so forth. The natural constraints are that farm now. And that's where regenerative agriculture is more utilized, right? Because you've got these massive acres of cropland that you're trying to manage.
What's happening on the plus side for these farmers?
You know, the regenerative agriculture, for example, has costs. But if you are working through the right packing house, it's a marketing tool for the farmer, right? To say, we practice regenerative agriculture. Consumers will pay more. At least that's what they have said prior to inflation. They'd pay more for that type of product. So that's something that you could market. The other thing that you can market are the health benefits. Again, going back to earlier in our conversation.
Mm-hmm, the functional.
Mm-hmm. The functional benefits, right? All fruits have some type of functional benefit, some more than others. Each one could be very different than the other. So you certainly want to market the functional benefit, the health benefits of the product. If you farm organically, that's an opportunity to market your product as well. So those three things right there are possible wins for the product. I think, too, consumers are still looking for less processed foods, utilizing more of the grains and the fruits than other ingredients within a product minimizes the amount of processing that does need to happen to be utilized. So that's something also that farmers and so forth can use in the marketing.
Well, I'm curious, now that you're out of your honeymoon, you probably came in with some ideas of what you wanted to do. And of course, now you've spent more than 6 months kind of analyzing what's happening at FruitSmart. So what's next for you guys? What are you planning on doing?
Well, I think one of the key opportunities for us is to enhance our marketing in the marketplace. We are well known within the sphere of influence that we play in right now. But there's a much bigger world out there than what we play in that really has very little or limited knowledge about what we can do. So we need to enhance our marketing of our brand, build our brand equity, if you will, so that we can have better conversations with a wider range of customers. I think the second thing that we need to be working on is developing novel concepts. You can do a lot more with fruit than just juice, puree, fruit preps, and of course, fresh, right? Which are the four primary things you can do with fruit. Fruit fiber, for example, has tremendous gut health benefits. But not only for the gut health, in terms of manufacturing a product, it can help maintain the moisture in a product. Typically, a fiber-based product can be very dry, very almost hard to eat. Fruit fiber does not have that problem. So we have created a variety of concepts that are starting points for a conversation, utilizing fruit in new and different ways than what you would think. And that is something that we need to continue to do. Our goal is to get people to sit there, I didn't know you could do that with fruit. And when you have them thinking that, then you can have the next conversation. Yes. How does that pertain to your product, for example?
Yeah, the food forward is a real concept that, you know, companies are always kind of pushing the boundaries with R&D and innovation. Well, Wayne, what is your personal philosophy when it comes to R&D and innovation? Is this something that you do you partner with food scientists outside the organization, or do you bring that function in-house? What's been your practice?
At Fruit Smart, we've done it in-house. And I think we are surprisingly good at it, given that a lot of people don't think of fruit in the way that we have presented it over the last 6 months. So that is where we are starting. That being said, in order for us to go to the next level, we will probably have to work with outside firms to help develop some concepts on our behalf. And that'll be something that we'll look at as we learn more about what we can and can't do with fruit. So internally, yes, but eventually we'll probably begin to outsource some of that as well.
Well, I think the name is pretty clever, Fruit Smart. I mean, the more I think about it, it speaks to many different levels of marketing, the consumer, to the customer, to the farmer, you know, all the different uses. You know, it's a smart usage. So I like that. It's a good play.
Well, thank you, Tony. I agree. I mean, like I said, if one of our goals is to get consumers to sit there or customers to sit there and say, I didn't know you can do that with fruit. Well, we're Fruit Smart. Two words. Fruit.
Right.
Smart.
Smart. Right? Yeah, I like it. I like it. Well, there's lots of different ways to innovate. So it'll be kind of curious to see. Well, Wayne, I think we covered a lot of ground. Anything that just was missed that you feel like people should hear?
Well, thank you for asking, Tony. I'm very excited about being in this role. I think the company has tremendous potential to bring new and exciting fruit products to our customers, helping them understand how to utilize that fruit to help enhance their marketing and their product, and ultimately bring it to the consumer in a way that the consumer will enjoy it and receive some functional benefits. So we're well positioned to do that. And I look very much forward to helping Fruit Smart help our customer base take it to the next level.
And give those consumers those many more choices that I know they're all out there looking for. Wayne, what's the best way for people to connect with Fruit Smart? What are the socials or what's the main website?
Yeah, sure. So thank you again for asking. Our website is fruitsmart.com. Fruitsmart.com. We also currently have a page, if you will, within the LinkedIn universe, as well as Facebook. So those three are the primary channels. We'll be expanding that over time. But of course, if you want to reach me, feel free to do so at wlutomski, LUTOMSKI, at fruitsmart.com.
Oh, now you've done it. You put your email out there.
I know.
Now you've done it.
That's all right, though.
Well, we will put this in the show notes so people know how to find Fruit Smart and to find your page and to find your personal page there on LinkedIn. Wayne, this has been very informative, and I hope people are getting a better idea of just how challenging it is to be a farmer. Support your farmers, support the fruit industry. These people need all the help and support we can give them. Thanks so much for being here today, Wayne.
Tony, thank you very much for the opportunity.